You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Retail Roundup. I'm Glenda Geek, founder of the Horse Radio Network and host of the Horses in the Morning show for the past 15 years. We welcome you to the Retail Roundup. We hope you're all recovered from your trip to Dallas last month to the trade show. We hope you all got back safely. I know a bunch of you are still dealing with the cold weather. You're probably sold out of horse blankets at this point. We are your go-to virtual hub for all things retail. We have panel discussions, we learn from webinars, we have guests like we do today, and we host a virtual event and share educational content pretty much every week. Today, we talk about the importance of sales training in the retail environment. And with us is an old podcasting friend of mine. I think we figured it was probably 12 years. And he is a leading expert in sales. Donald Kelly is a world-class speaker, mentor, and host of one of the most popular sales podcasts. He spent years helping people ditch the awkward scripts and start building a genuine, high-value relationship with their customers. Hey, Donald. Good to have you here.
Glenn, thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate the invite to be a part of the community, man.
Yeah, we've known each other for so long, and I think I may have been on. By the way, Donald's podcast is at almost 2,000 episodes, so he's been doing this a little while. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you, and I mean, you guys are at 4, so I always want to have good people to follow, so I'm trying to get to that 4,000 level.
We'll see where we're at one day. By that point. You'll catch up. So you talk a lot on your show about all different kinds of sales relationships, and today we're going to focus on the retail side of things. Sure. And, you know, most of our listeners are retail shops with 2 employees to 30 employees, I would say in that range is probably, and probably 2 to 10 is the average. They're in the horse world. They're dealing with horse people. Usually they hire horse people, maybe not salespeople, mm-hmm. but horse people. So what kind of training do you recommend for associates on the floor of a small retail operation like that?
So it's not necessarily a branded type of training, like, you know, go with this brand or this company or whatnot. But the thing that I find, especially in a situation like that, is more of the role play type of training. Here's why. I've done door-to-door security sales, and in that window, you have a short period of time. I'm talking like, just like in retail, you have like, you know, minutes. And if that,
oh, I'd
like
say seconds now, right?
Yeah. It's just really short. Like if you get like a minute, but how long it takes me to do a door pitch is that, you know, short window. And in retail, I think even if a smaller window, because they have some interest that they have. And they're coming into your store, or they're in your store and you're engaging in some kind of dialogue, you have moments before you can lose them. What is that going to take? We can do theory as much as we want. But the best thing I found in any of those situations is role play. But you got to give them role plays of what good looks like. So, and some people get bent out of shape on this. We're working on episode, but there's an ideal situation that you should follow. Like if in everyone's situation, it'll be ideal if you got a bunch of referrals with somebody who wants to spend thousands of dollars with us and we get those. That's ideal. Great. But we don't get ideal every day, but that's the one we work towards. We're going to have those situations where somebody comes in and they're not too excited and they only want to spend, you know, maybe $50 or $120 worth of stuff. You have someone that comes in and they want to spend thousands of dollars. But the point I'm trying to make is that you need to show your associates what good looks like, the optimal situation, and they all work towards that in each of their selling situation, whether they get there or not with each of the customers. And I can tell you that's what one of the biggest things that helped me, because I did the book work. When I was doing more of the retail and B2C side, I followed the scripts, so to speak, that they had. And the problem was, it wasn't that great until I visually saw what the scenario looked like. And that proved, it gave me opportunities to then use it. And one of the things that we saw at Credit My Management back then was the managers always did live role plays, like regularly at different parts of the process so that it became second nature. Because again, our sales process in the retail space is so tiny. It's really difficult to just do textbook work. Not that I'm against that, but if I'm going to do a training for an organization or anyone in retail, I always defer back to some kind of role play based scenario so that you can see this is what good looks like. You can watch it, and then now let's practice it. Hopefully that makes sense there.
Yeah. In our situation, it would be maybe the business owner who is the one that does that. And they can actually do that. The stores are so small. They can do that. Like if you're in a boot department and, you know, you want to teach your associate how, you know, what the best way to approach selling boots are, you show them. I mean, you're basically showing them by example, and they're watching you. And that's your real world scenario and it can happen so much easier in a small store. Because you are so close together. You're not really spread out. And I learned the same way by the role playing. I was in the financial world, but that's how we did it. We role played until it became almost muscle memory, to the point where it was muscle memory. You know, one of the things that we all hear, and I worked retail, we owned our own store too. And I do this every day, and you do this every day. We all do this every day, is the associate kindly says, with a smile or not, but they say, how can I help you? And you say, I'm just looking. And I'm a lot of times saying I'm just looking because I really am just looking and I'm killing time waiting for my wife. Okay, that's an example of when I truly am just looking. A lot of times people say they're just looking because they want to buy time to see what you have before they ask you anything or before they have to approach you about trying the boots on or, you know, testing a saddle. What do you do to overcome that? What do you say to the I'm just looking training?
There are two sides, two avenues that we're going to go down with this, the scenario. I'm going to traditional and then I go non-traditional. The traditional avenue is where you tell that person, you know, you go up to them, you know, how are you doing? What brought you in today? And say, I'm just looking. You can say, great. And then give them a tour in a quick second. Say, well, as you're looking, I want you to just understand back here, we have our saddles. Over here, we have our boots. Over here, we have reins, and over here, we have whatever types of tools. Feel free to look. I'll be back here doing whatever, and you can just give a holler. My name is Donald, by the way. What's your name, by the way?
It's Glenn.
Glenn. Oh, great. Great. And you start the conversation, or you just leave them, let them be at that point. But the point there is you're giving them a tour so they can understand, and you help them to pick their own path of the journey.
I stop you on one there? You said something that I think is brilliant. You said, what brought you in today, instead of, can I help you? Exactly. I like that so much better because there, can I help you? No, I'm just looking. What brought you in today makes me catches me off guard first as the customer.
Yes.
And makes me actually
interrupt.
And I might just tell you why I came in today because I've been caught off guard, right? I don't have time to deal with that with that question in my mind. I'm just going to say, well, yeah, I came in to look at saddles. At least then you have a direction of what they are they're looking for.
Yes. So then the second one and that I would say for in a scenario like this is we know where they are going. Like it's not even playing games, but there's in the B2B option. When I do B2B sales, I learned this process is called the menu. So most objections, there's probably like three main reasons why people give you that objection. So I'm just going to give mine and I'll come back into this. So let's say somebody talks to me and say, Donald, yeah, I'm not interested. Like Glenn, you know, most times when people tell me they're not interested is because really they just are not looking to buy anything. They're not interested. Two, they already have a vendor they're working with. Or three, they just don't see the value in this. Is it any of those by chance? And what you're doing, you're shortchanging the buying their process rather than go through the long thing of you doing like, you know, trying to figure out deep analysis. I've done this. If you talk to 10 customers, you talk to every customer because it's probably the similar situation. So I'm picking the top three scenarios that typically come when people tell me I'm not interested. And I give that to the buyer and the prospect. And they might say, well, you know, Donald, I have a vendor that I'm working with. Great. Now I know where to go with that. So now come back in the store. I can go one path, like we talked about what brought you in today. Or two, the second path is like, hey, you know, what brought you into, or you can just go straight into it. Hi, nice to meet you. My name is Donald. I just want to give you a quick tour of our store, blankety blank, blankety blank, blankety blank. Most people have been coming in for the past couple of weeks are looking for either, you know, just shopping around looking, or they're trying to find saddles or warm blankets. Is it any of those by chance? But you give them a tour, but now you're adding on to it because you're going for the main reasons why that people brought in. Either they're just looking around or based on a lot of sales we're doing, they're looking for warm, for blankets, or it's, you know, saddle. They're just looking at saddle because that's a, one of our most selling option. Is it any of those by chance? Well, it's saddle. But now what this forces the buyer to do is not to say, I am, if they say I'm just looking, then yeah, give them the just looking spiel that we just talked about. But this gives them the option to say, well, you know, I am looking for blankets, or I am curious. It is kind of cold. What do you have? And it starts dialogue. Our goal here is not to be order takers, or we can have an AI to do it. Our goal is to find ways to get one, attention and break through the noise, and two, to be able to get engagement. Once we get engagement, conversation starts. Am I making sense on this?
Glenn? Yeah, you make total sense. You know,
can I get a job?
One of the things that you and I have done a lot of, and we do even on, because we're podcast hosts, is we tell stories. And, you know, stories are an excellent sales tool. Now, they don't always apply, but in a retail situation, sometimes they do apply. And now you've overcome, now they are looking at blankets, right? Okay, let's assume that. They're looking at blankets. And that's where what you might refer to as micro stories. When you take a look at a micro story, that's a situation where I, as the sales associate, can say, I've used these and really like them. Matter of fact, you know, they were running around like crazy and the blanket didn't disintegrate, and I've had it for 6 months and it hasn't disintegrated. Personal micro stories is also a way of connecting, right?
Oh, for sure. It's relatable. It's the art, the art that connects us as humans for generations, right? Everyone has that story. And it's the thing, I feel it's the thing that makes us uniquely human in the sense of the imagination. Like, animals don't have imaginations as we do, from what I've learned in my studies. But what
I think some of my horses do, to be honest, Donald.
They probably do. Okay, we'll take that back. But it allows for us to start making imagery. And it allows for us to start, you know, for cognitively, you know, to be connected with somebody else, because I'm going into your world. As soon as you started telling me, yeah, we've had one for 6 months and my horse has run around and it hasn't disintegrated, I picture all of that in my mind. And it also allows me to relate to my problem, because yes, my horses are running around and they're cold right now. And yeah, the ones that I've had did disintegrate in the past. The point I'm trying to make is, it allows us to relate. So your micro stories, you can do two things. You can do the personal, or you can do use the customer. The personal one allows that this is, I use it, but also I understand you, and I'm not just some, you know, sales guy in here, like Donald selling, but I actually do have horses and I do maintain a ranch or
some
whatnot.
Credibility, but there too. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But then the customer side, like Donald, now I would come back and then say, yeah, you know, this is a good one. You know, most of our clients, one of our customers last week brought up an issue where their blankets were, or whatever, was disintegrating, or they had issues over time. And they want to find something that's going to last more than 3 months. Help me understand, for you, are you looking for a long-term thing? Do you have current ones that you're using? What brand have you used? Tell me. But the point is, I'm getting them engaged, but I use somebody else's story to help set that parameter. And the question allows for me to continue the dialogue.
And it's perfect, too, because they've just told you they had a certain brand that disintegrated. You're not going to come back with that same brand.
Of course not. No. Right. It's going to be, well, I know they're not looking for cheap stuff anymore. They're looking for a mid or a long or the higher brand. So let me go in and give them the better and the best options.
Yeah, I like that, too. It's like you teach this and actually do it every day. It's crazy. You know, one of the things, too, that in retail we have the opportunity to do once they've picked out a blanket and everything, we have an opportunity to upsell. I think it is something that some of the stores I've been to do very well in a very subtle way. Some are not as subtle and probably should be more subtle. But that upsell is also where, you know, you're going to sell your baseline of products. You're going to sell your blankets. You're going to sell a certain amount of those every year. And I know that as a store owner. It's what I can get them to add to the blanket. It's what I can get them to add on to that sale that now takes me to the place beyond that baseline, right? It's the part that actually puts you in the most profit is the part you can upsell beyond the baseline. So you have some tricks for that?
Two. The first one is we have to get the team on the right mindset first. And then the second one is the Amazon model. So the first and it ties to FOMO. But the first one is get the team in the right mindset. If we can get our team members, our associates, everyone in our organization that we're going to do what's best for the customer, upsell doesn't become an issue at that point. because it's not about the sale. It's about solving problems for our customers. So again, they come in and they tell you, I'm looking for blankets. Tell me a little bit more of what's happening. Well, this happens and it disintegrates and so forth. Blankety blank. Tell me how many horses are you looking at? Blankety blank. So now I get a little bit of understanding of the scenario. Well, based on that, here's what I would recommend. I'd recommend that you get at least, if you get the 3 blankets, it's not going to be cost effective. What you should be getting is the 5-pack, and that's going to give you opportunities to have more and blah, 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 blah. The other thing with that is this, you mentioned that it because of, you know, you have water on your property or you have this, or you have a lot of humidity around. Most of our clients in that certain circumstances, to help preserve the blankets much longer, they buy the cases as well. And you can get one case and you can keep all your blankets in there. But if you'd like, you can have multiple cases. Would you like the 5-pack, or would you like to get in multiple cases, or one case? But now I'm solving a problem for them based on their particular scenario. And that mindset changes. It's not about a sale. It's about, I have to solve problems for this customer. Because I want, when you leave Glenn, you can say, these guys made me better. And you may leave with only buying the 1 blanket, and that's best for you right now. But for some other customer, I'm not doing it. And if I find that people often go into this scenario, Glenn, because they don't have this mindset. They have a sales mindset. If you have a sales mindset and you're thinking, I'm just going to upsell, then you're going to have the guilty feeling like, oh, well, I'm going to sell them what they don't need. No, we're solving a problem for what they do need. If I come to you, Glenn, and I have no shoes and I'm telling you I'm walking, running a marathon, you would be doing me a disservice as a shoe store to sell me just the shoes without selling me the socks as well. And you'll be even more of a disservice if you don't sell me more than 1 shoes, because I'm going to wear through that 1 pair of shoes. You see what I'm trying to get at? Like it's a moral obligation to help me solve a problem so I can perform the best, because I'm going to come back to you and recommend people to you at that point. But the short-term thinking I find, especially with junior associates who feel guilty, or they feel like it's not like, I don't want to push too much on them. They're going to disservice the client because I don't want to try to push them, Glenn, to buy something else, buy 2 blankets. Well, they just spent $100 on one and they could get 2 for $150. That is better of a service for them. I'm making this up, but you know, hopefully this is coming across.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think a key to that too, and you've been kind of saying it the whole time, is like an improv theater, which I was trained in, like in sales, which I was trained in. They both have, improv and sales both have one thing in common. I think you know what it is. It's listening. Listening is the most important thing you do in improv. It's the most important thing you do in sales. You listen. Yeah. You hear, and you actually listen to what they're telling you.
100%. And I feel like that's, you've always shared that with me before about improv. And I think that's what makes it so, you know, that yes and theory. It's yes, I can sell them a blanket, and am I doing the right piece at this point? Or how can I make it better for them in this scenario? And the other piece of that too is the Amazon component, where Amazon does the recommendation for the clients. So you can do this in display. Oftentimes you're going to go to the cereal section and you're going to see bowls and the bananas. Like, why in the world did it have bananas? Well, the top of the section, because people who typically have grape nuts, they're probably going to have a banana with it as well. And they're going to eat out of a bowl. So you have the nice little kids bowl there. But it's that upsell. Amazon, people who buy this usually buy this as well. And you can always train your associates. You can look at your scheme and your data and see, well, most of our tickets that sell a blanket, usually people will buy, and I can ask you, you probably could tell me what they buy with it as well on that ticket. And you can just see that you can AI, we have AI now. So you can take that, you know, your ledger and just dump it into like chat and say, when people buy blankets, what else do they buy on average? And, you know, for every 5 blankets we sell, somebody buys, I don't know, a saddle as well. Well, darn it. Well, I need to probably include that. So I'm going to, not to everybody, just to say, hey, you know, also when folks buy our blankets, what we typically find is that they're usually looking at saddles as well. These are some of the saddles we have. I'm making that up. The saddle is probably way more expensive than the blanket. But the point is, you probably have something that can complement the blanket that you can also sell along with that as well. And that allows me now, it's just to let me know at the end of that, and if we program our team, because that's good service. You can say, like, again, go back to the shoes. If somebody's buying a shoe, it's your moral obligation to sell them socks as well, or at least tell them about the socks. Maybe they have socks. Don't force it on them. But say, you know, Donald, if you're buying that, you're probably also going to look at this. Most of our clients either get this or this. Would you be interested in one of those or both?
I like the most of our clients too. I mean, that's a nice way of not putting pressure on. But if you want to be like them, it's kind of saying if you want to be like them, you know. I want to come back to AI here in just a minute before we wrap up too. Yeah. But you know, one of the biggest things, and I see this all the time, there's a retailer Facebook page and for equine retailers. And one of the biggest problems, and I'm sure all small retailers have this now, is the customer's in there, they're looking at the blanket. Let's stay there for now. And you see them on their phone searching on whatever website, right? And seeing, comparing the cost. So, you know, and they're checking the prices and they probably, some of them have ordered it and are having it shipped by the time they walk out your door. Can you even overcome that today?
Yeah. I think the way you do that is by the experience. So let me back up here. We went to, where was it? We were buying baseball equipment for my son. And I think we bought one that we thought was good online, right? And then it was like, darn it, we should have just, you can get this at Dick's. And Dick's was more expensive, but the Dick's had the associates that they could give us better understanding and help us out to make better decision. If the education is good, it makes sense at that point. So this is where if we start having connection with our prospective clients and customers inside of our stores and getting their stories, engaging like the models we share at the top, we're going to get their stories and we're going to engage with them. And that allows for us to demonstrate our expertise. People will buy with the expertise, where buy from the expert rather than buying the product. And yeah, you're going to have some people who are just going to shop and they just want to, you know, come into the retail store and just to find and see that is cheaper. Well, you know, God bless them. They're going to do that. But
and they're not going to buy from you for anything. Yeah,
exactly. It's something else.
Yeah.
But you're going to have people who you can sell that experience to, and experience costs for more, or the education on that. And, you know, you can tell them like, yeah, you can find some of, we're not the cheapest shop around. And, you know, no one in the world is going to beat Amazon. However, the reason why our clients still buy from us than Amazon is because one, we're always here. They can always get somebody that can help. Two, they can find real solutions to their problems rather than just a simple product. And three, we know horses. For instance, I've been riding since I was 14, and our owner has been riding since God invented horses. So we know horses, and that makes a huge difference. And that's why they tell us. And we'll tell you products that you shouldn't get. You don't always need everything. So here's what I have to tell you today. If you tell me what you're looking at, I can give you an experience and I can show you that and help you understand why people buy from us rather than just, you know, buying a product. So tell me your experience, your story, or whatever you're going into.
You know, it comes back to the two. I learned this in theater and I also learned this in sales. No matter, and in podcasting, you have the same experience. 80% of the people are going to like you. 20% are going to like anything you do, no matter what you say, but they're always listening. So that's the 20. It's funny because we remember the person that came in, you spent 20 minutes with, and then they bought it online before they left the store, right? You remember that person, and now you've forgotten the 9 others you helped that day that bought from you, but you remember the one. Yep. We have to be in the mindset now, and I do this, I think, better than most because I've had so much experience with the 20%. I've learned to ignore the 20%. And when you're a creator and even an influencer, you know, they have the same problem, even more. The 20-year-olds now that have a million followers are learning what it's like to have 20% of a much larger number that hate them, but yet they comment on every video, right? But you have to learn to tune that out. That's something, because you have to cater to the 80%. And it's true in stores too. You know, in stores, it's probably a store, the 20% of your customers will be 80% of your business. You're catering to that 20% in a retail store that are 80% of your business. It doesn't mean you don't talk to the others, but it means you don't fret about the 20. They're always going to be that 20% that are going to come in and waste your time, and you'll learn to spend less and less time with them. And
the 80%. The 80 that will not buy, the 20 that will buy, who provide 80% of your revenue.
Right. I also learned something else too in sales. And I don't know if you were taught this, but one of my first sales instructor, when I was 18 years old, when I got into sales, he said, fire your worst client every year.
Oh, my goodness.
So every year I fired a client. And that meant that was the one that, one, probably I didn't make as, I paid the least amount of money, but they took up the most amount of time. We did that actually with our, when we had a retail store. They were the client that was always asking you for stuff, always returning things. Finally, we would get to the point where we would suggest they shop somewhere else at the end of every year. We always made more money the next year because we fired our worst client because they took up so much time, mentally and physically, you know?
And I think this is not a bad practice for all things in life, right? You know, you analyze who are those people that are going to time suck me in my life. And also, it goes back to your... You know, even with the team members, you know, most of you have small teams, but do I have staff members that are not, that are taking up a lot of our time that's not helping to fulfill the mission, and that we can find other people who are focused on that? And I, you know, sometimes people just outgrow, or, you know, the organization outgrow them, and you just make changes. So it's, don't make it an emotional thing. It's, you, obviously there's emotion and part of it, but you, I'm not going to keep some, well, I don't want to hurt their feelings.
We're still running a business.
It's going to hurt my business. Yeah.
And you know, we all do this with our family subconsciously. You spend less and less time with certain people in your and every family has them.
Yeah.
You know, and some families you're left with two when you're done. You know, it's just, but we all
your
do
dog
it.
And your cat.
Yeah, exactly. Or a horse in our case. So you brought up AI. I'd be interested to know, and I know this is not something we talked about today, but you brought up AI. How are retailers, small retailers, able to use AI to better performance overall?
Yeah, I mean, so go back, tap on the one that we were talking about earlier. I mean, it's very, we can use it. We have a lot of information that we're getting. And to go back to your 80-20 rules, that's an easy way. Like for all the products we have in our store, which ones do we sell the most and which ones, what demographic do we sell the most? That's a, you know, can you help me with a prototype of who that ICP is who typically buy my saddle? But that's going to help from the retail standpoint. The other thing that this can help with, just before we come back into the actual selling part, this more marketing side, is that's going to help you with your, you know, your like your ads, if you're going to do ads and run any type of ads to get people to come to your store as well. But just taking advantage of AI to run your data and who's the demographic and what should I, what can I do to attract that type of audience. You can also then even go even further, take a picture of your store. And based on that ideal customer, say, this is what my layout of my store is. Any suggestions that you would give me to make this more optimized for this type of client who are coming in here to in our store? I mean, what's my flow look like? Maybe even just because if you do the pictures, you can say, yeah, well, maybe it's cluttered or you can't see this properly. But there's so many different use cases that we can use with AI. You can have your salespeople role play when it comes to AI. You know, let's practice that pitch like we talked about. Give me some feedback. What can I do to make my 1 minute my value proposition for this new saddle, you know, more effective? The signs in my store, what are some of the things based on the ICP that we created this for? And based on what you see who buy from us, is my signage, what should I have on my, what are the content I should have on my signage to help sell more blankets at this point? But those are some easy ways that we can take advantage of AI tools.
And I think a lot of people think about AI in the terms of asking it a sentence or two question to get an answer, right?
Yeah.
But you can have it analyze your entire spreadsheets. You can have it, you know, and that's the thing I think a lot of people don't realize is you can put a ton of information in. And actually, Gemini is making it easier to do it right if your spreadsheets are in. You put them in Google and then we'll analyze
Google,
it.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I have that. I do that all the time now. We have it analyze our performance here with the podcast and things like that. It's amazing what it comes out with that you've never looked at. Right,
100%. Because we just don't think like that. So it's we're in a bold, going a bold new world in this new frontier. And I feel it's, if you stay and say, well, I don't want to do the internet thing, I'm gonna stay with, you know, my phone book, then God bless you. We're entering that phase right now with AI, and we can use it in a lot of ways, not to rob us of humanity, but we can use it to help us out, to, you know, get stuff started or to perform better.
You can be opposed to it mentally and physiologically. You can be opposed to it, but the problem is your competition is not, it's here, it's not going away. So if you're, our battle as small retailers is always with the large online stores. We have them in the horse world too. They are using AI to enhance their performance and to sell more. if you, one of the things I took out of PodFest, the big podcasting conference that we were at in January, and I do a session with the pros there, the people who are making a living, and a lot of them making a very good living, you know, a lot of them. And we have our own private session for an entire day. And what I learned is if you're not learning how to utilize AI to better do what you do in any job, you're not going to have a job in 5 years. You're just not, because your competition is.
Yes, 100%. It is. What I proposed to Chris earlier in the, late in the fall, if it was still time, and I was going to get my session over to him. But again, things change with the family's dynamics. Just had to stay home a little bit here. But to the same conference, I forgot how much money we cut in expenses each year, because I use what's known as vibe coding to create my own software. I have four softwares now. I canceled Trello. I canceled PandaDoc for our proposal. I canceled my CRM. I canceled something else that we were doing. But now everything is incorporated in our own podcast production software for our whole team. And productivity has gone up and it's improved, and I'm saving money. So AI is here. We can optimize it. And the same thing within our retail stores. You can use it in so many different ways. Even again, if you will go back to the idea of take all of your sales for the whole year and dump it in there and ask, what campaign should I run for each month based on my sales performance? Compare this to what other retail stores are doing, other horse stores are doing, and what Amazon is doing as well.
Yeah,
make me a better offer. So.
Yeah, it just, you can be philosophically opposed to it.
Yeah.
But be prepared to, you know, to not be around in 5 years. It's just.
Way to motivate me, Glenn.
because your competition will use it. And it is a tool. And I kind of look at it as a tool. Do I believe that all of AI is good? No. I believe that there are going to be issues in the future that we're going to have to deal with. Does that change the fact that it's here to stay? No. That also doesn't change that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I interviewed someone today, and one of the things they said, because I brought this question up, how is that is it going to rob us of our humanity?
Yeah.
One of the things she said was that we just need to be boldly curious. If we're curious, that means we are going to continue to look for ways to learn. And I think we need to be gated and guarded as well. Like, you know, AI is, it grows at an exponential rate, and we need to have safeguards in place. And if we are staying curious and not just, you know, how can we make sure it stayed in place, and how can we make sure we still use it to be able to improve and to still maintain our humanity? You just got to stay curious and not be, don't become like the Wally, situation where we're just sitting around and depending everything on it. We just be boldly curious. So.
And those people that are will succeed. And isn't that really true of salespeople? And one of the first things you're taught as a good salesperson is to constantly be learning and educating yourself. And AI does allow us, I have been using it to educate myself too.
Yeah.
And still verify. I mean, it's not always right, although it's right more now than it ever has been. It's getting righter as the days go on. Scarily that way.
There's a good and a bad with that. Yes.
Well, where can people find you and hear your podcast and all that stuff?
Oh, fun. If you want to check out our podcast, you can go to wherever you find your podcast and search, or you can go to thesalesevangelist.com. It's our show. We talk all things sales. I do solo episodes and bring on sales experts. And we, Mondays and Fridays, we have a new episode drop. So you can check it out.
Do you consult as well?
I do. So now let's go back to AI. It's one of our bigger revenues components. So I do more of the consulting, and then I have other facilitator who does also work with us. We have training programs. So we do online where team members join live sessions, and they also have modules and things they work through, and we facilitate those and do one-on-one coaching. But my thing is be the pep rally, the cheerleader for the organization, and take care of the consulting. So we do consulting projects, and those are always fun.
Very good. I'll put links in the show notes as well. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Donald, it's so good to see you again.
Same to you, Glenn. Thanks so much. And congratulations. And all of you who are here, I mean, the 700-800 of you who are listening to this, I know you know one or two other people who could benefit from this podcast and things that Glenn's sharing. And I just, from a podcaster to a podcaster, I just know this is, you find it beneficial. Please share it with one other person and let's help them with all these episodes Glenn have. So thank you. You didn't pay me to do that.
You can appreciate that. WESATradeshow.com is the website. We also have our YouTube channel. Now, there is a new schedule for the podcasts. The Wisdom by WESA podcast will be out twice a month, and then Retail Roundup will be out twice a month. So every week on a Thursday, that's the new schedule, these episodes will come out. And you all know the Wisdom by WESA podcast. My wife hosts that one, and I host this one. So every other week, we will be rotating these episodes. And thanks to Sophia over at WESA for helping us put all of that together and being such a great support. Donald, hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Glenn. Same to you. Congrats.